Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 18th of March. I know there are people listening who have lost jobs, who have been laid off, who have been fired from jobs. It's a very, very, it goes without saying how tough it is for everybody in the job market these days. And we thought we would offer you some help this hour. Our guest is Martha Finney. And Martha is the author of Rebound, A Proven Plan for Starting Over After Job Loss. She is president and CEO of Engagement Journeys, a business journalist for 20 years before becoming a full-time consultant. And she specializes in helping organizations achieve greater employee engagement, loyalty, retention, and passion. Her original research on the American workplace has been featured on CNN, also on NPR's Morning Edition, and in major newspapers all over the country. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Martha. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you would like to send us an email, you can do that as well, and that address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hello, Martha. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me this morning. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, our pleasure. I would imagine that a lot of people are reading your books these days. I'm sorry to say that's the case, but this is one rough time for people in jobs, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is, but it's not the first time we've been in this pickle, and I'm sure it won't be the last time. So my hope is that every time we cycle through one of these economic crises, we come out of it wiser for the experience so that we can pass that wisdom on to future generations.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Tell the story of your dad. You got involved in this whole field because of your dad, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, my dad was a spy.
Oh, sure, my dad was a spy. He was.
That to put too fine a point on it. And he was extremely central to CIA's Cold War dealings. He was actually part of the original team that discovered that Cuba was beginning to amass missiles from Russia, and which ended up being the Cuban Missile Crisis. So he would be what anybody would have considered a very high performer in his job. He gave his life over to his work. He was extremely passionate about it, and he felt deeply committed to the organization's mission-critical mission there, and he still got laid off. Hmm. One day, in the late 70s, he was teaching a class in Mexico City, and after having been at the CIA for, I guess, around 30 years, his career came to an abrupt halt with a knock on the door of the classroom.
Hmm.
A guy came in, handed him his notice that he was his services were no longer required, and that was the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first exposure to the notion that you could be an extremely high performer, passionate about your work, invest, you know, discretionary effort, go beyond and above the call of duty, and still get canned.
Right. Your father's pain, as you write, became your calling.
It sure did.
Mm-hmm. And also probably fashioned the way that you've gone about work, because you also say that you came to the understanding no matter who you worked for, you would always and only be working for yourself. Expand on that.
Well, it was just so clear to me right off the bat that no matter who we work for, we're all self-employed. And when I was entering the workforce myself, it was at about the same time when the feminist expression that poverty is one decision away started coming into vogue. And that meant that there were so many women who depended on one household income from their husbands. And I realized that destitution was only one decision away as well, and that was the decision of your manager. And you could have a emotionally healthy manager who was a great leader who had to make the decision to let you go, or you could have had, you know, a nut who had management issues, him or herself, and would let you go. So as a result, I kind of fell off the grid when it came to typical employment. I just felt that security was between my own ears rather than depending on any one person to decide that maybe tomorrow I may or may not have a job. So I guess I came to the conversation with a little bit of an attitude.
There's nothing wrong with a little bit of an attitude, I would say. Nothing wrong with that at all. Well, this whole idea, and it was true, it really was true for my father when he was in the workforce, but this idea that you have some kind of net of stability, that you go to college, you learn what you want to do, and you do your job well, and you put your heart in it, and you put your passion in it. Does it lead to security? Uh-uh, not now.
And you know what? It never really did. You know, I think that whole idea of the employment contract is a myth that goes back a lot farther than we typically think it does. I was watching a video the other day of a concurrent session leader at an HR conference who said that the Gen X generation is the first generation to experience the fact that their parents got laid off. Well, that's ridiculous. When you think about the Great Depression, people lost their jobs. You know, hundreds of thousands of people lost their jobs. And, you know, they may not have called it layoff in those days, but that's exactly what happened, and that's what made up for those images of bread lines and, and guys in suits selling pencils and apples. So the idea of the employment contract may have had a little bit of a twinkling glimmer of life in the 50s and 60s, but those were the people who would be getting laid off in the 70s. So my feeling is it never existed.
Right. You talk about, and isn't this true, that getting laid off really touches every aspect of your life, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. It's obviously, it's a financial aspect, you know, certainly. It is certainly an emotional aspect for yourself. It does derail your career for however long it takes for you to get back on your feet. It's a self-esteem aspect. It's also a social aspect, and one of my favorite areas of exploration, of course, is how it affects your children. I really believe that the way we demonstrate how we tolerate this time of uncertainty now is a key way of equipping our children and future generations on how to sustain their own resilience, because uncertainty is the name of the game from now moving forward. If it hasn't been in the past, it's like it's a new form of uncertainty. And I think it's up to us to teach the children that they will be okay in their lives, even if they have to punt every now and then.
And yet when you receive that notice that you've been laid off, you no longer have your job, it seems to me as though it's pretty easy to not be resilient, that, you know, the natural reaction here is to be furious that you've played by the rules, you lost your job, you may have health insurance concerns, you may have money concerns, how are you going to pay the mortgage, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
The natural inclination, and you really warn against this, is to be furious and to let everybody know how furious you are about all of this, and then to go home and be even more furious and not be able to carry on.
Oh, yeah. The first chapter of my book is called What to Expect When You're No Longer Expected.
Yeah.
And it talks a lot about your emotional reactions to the fact that one day you've got an overloaded calendar full of deliverables, full of appointments, full of people that are expecting you to be there because your projects are critical. And then the very next day, you're nobody. How did that happen? And as I was writing that piece, I was thinking about how, you know, this is kind of an off-the-subject analogy here, but how Princess Di died, and how even though she was still in the car, it was the internal damage of her fast-moving innards is what killed her. And so, you know, I know that's kind of weird, but I'm just thinking about how we're all moving so fast, and suddenly we're told to stop.
Right.
And what happens to our heart and brain? It smashes. It goes smash. And so there's such an emotional impact to who we are and our internal timing and just that sucking vacuum of, oh, my gosh, I have an empty day tomorrow. You know, what do you do with that? It's like this phantom limb that keeps itching, keeps saying, you know, take care of me, and there's no me to take care of at that point. And obviously thinking about it in terms of a job.
And the children are off at school, and your spouse is probably off at work, and your friends are at work.
And you're all by yourself.
You're all by yourself.
And, you know, the worst part is that that's when the awful daytime commercials are on that talks about freaking out when the IRS is calling and various, you know, credit card issues. And that's also when you start getting phone calls from scam artists because you've got time on your hands and you may not be so inclined to hang up on them and they know it. And so suddenly you're whipping out your credit card for something that you weren't expecting to pay for. And so you're just super vulnerable at that time. You know, the only other people you have to talk to are other folks who are laid off, and they may just want to be wallowing in the misery of not having a job. And so that's not helping you, and it's not helping your emotions, and it's not helping you get back on your feet.
Right.
And in the meantime, you're wondering, well, how come your coworkers haven't called you to say, gee, we're so sorry to hear what happened?
Right.
For all they know, you could have been arrested.
Right.
You know, you're just like an empty chair now, and how you know, demoralizing is that?
I know, completely. Going back one step, when you first get the news, though, you really warn people against, obviously you're emotional, and maybe you can't help but cry when you hear the news, but to try to be as alert as possible, perhaps to take notes, because what the information you're receiving is very important, and you may need these people down the road, so how you take that information is equally as important.
Absolutely. So there are several pieces of advice that I would give there. One is that remember that these people that you're working with, either the two people who are laying you off inside that small room with a closed door right that very minute, you're going to be seeing these people for the rest of your career in some iteration or another. In fact, some of these people might end up working for you one day. There's one woman that I talked to in the book who talks about how she kept her mouth shut during the layoff announcement, but somebody else totally vented his spleen. And she said, I was so thankful that he was able to articulate what I was really feeling, but I was really thankful I kept my mouth shut. Because 2 weeks later, she got an email from the company asking her to come back at a promotion. So you just never know what the outcome of that one moment in time is going to be when you've been laid off. So if you keep your cool, you are in charge of the game.
Right. And that's so hard to do. It's so hard to keep your cool in a moment like that, isn't it?
What's the matter? You don't love me. You don't love me. I'm useless. Oh.
Right. I know. All
so the
of
other
that.
Thing is that a lot of companies, not all, but a lot of companies will slide a severance agreement across the table at you. And attached to that severance agreement is a check made out to you for a figure that's probably larger than you've ever seen before, except for perhaps your house down payment. So you're faced with the choice of taking the agreement and that check or sliding it back across the table. And my advice is slide it back across the table. Don't
Why?
Sign.
Why?
Because you need some time to think about what the severance agreement is offering you, whether there are some aspects to that agreement that you can negotiate to your advantage. Sliding it back across the table doesn't mean you're saying no to it forever. You're just asking for the time that you have a right to and that you can calm down and think things through. You know, one of the things that just boggles my mind is that these days it takes much longer to buy a car than it does for you to lose your job with just simply the stroke of a pen. And so a company may want you to believe that it's take it or leave it. But it never is. You do have rights.
And you don't know what those are if you're not expecting to be laid off, right? So you need to find out what your rights are.
You need to find out what your rights are, which this book does help you understand a little bit. But more importantly, you can't sign something when your head is swimming. And it's not fair to expect you to. So let your head stop spinning and calm down, ask for a copy of the severance package, and bring it home so you can either talk to your spouse or an attorney, and just think things through. You have a few days. You don't need to sign it right off the bat. And you could actually sweeten the severance deal as a result.
Let's welcome phone calls for Martha. Martha Finney is our guest this hour. Her book is Rebound, A Proven Plan for Starting Over After Job Loss, How to Come Back Stronger and Better Than Ever. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, that address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's start phone calls for Martha. Mary from Madison is first. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. That's such a funny chapter for the book, What to Expect When You're No Longer Expected. That is an awful day, too, that first day you wake up and you realize there's nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. And you hope they're sorry. They're sorry they let you go. Living in a university town, I wanted to ask two questions. One thing that makes me crazy myself about all of these columns and advice things in the paper is that they always involve this last-minute Hail Mary, this God in the machine that suddenly makes everything all right. And I notice they often advise in chipper terms that you just start looking for part-time work, you find what they call income streams, do what you love, the usual New Age gobbledygook. Nobody ever mentions health insurance. They always assume that you are married to a 500 executive that provides top-of-the-line insurance. No problem. He'll carry you. And, of course, living in a university town, you have lots and lots of very low-end, dead-end jobs. And so my two questions are this. Whatever does one do when there's nothing out there but part-time jobs that will never have health insurance, and all it takes is one root canal to wipe most people out? And secondly, what I've run into looking into these part-time jobs is that employers understandably don't want you to come and go in a week when you get offered a quarter more somewhere else. And more I find they're trying to find out if you're going to stay a long time. They want you essentially to commit to staying a long time. And twice now I've had employers react with a lot of anger when I left for a job that paid more, as I had to do. By the time you take home $7 after deductions, you might be taking home $3.50. And unless you're a kid living with your parents, you can't make that work. And I wanted to ask your guest how, without lying outright, I've tried being upfront about this and saying I'll do this for the winter, and I'll try to do a good job for you so I'm not involved in a long commute. And I've had them simply say, no, we only want long-term employees.
Martha.
Boy, what fascinating questions. Let me start with the health insurance question first. And I think I could probably knock that one out pretty quickly. While you're still employed, if you see that people are being laid off around you, that is the time for you to start taking care of things like your annual checkup and get all those procedures done that maybe you might have been putting off, like the root canal, before you end up taking that long walk down the hall to get your own, you know, laid off announcement. So one of the advantages there is that you leave your company with a clean bill of health, which will help qualify you for the best possible rates on your own health insurance. You're going to discover, of course, that COBRA is extremely expensive, and you might be able to find better health insurance opportunities independently of that, but you really improve your chances if you've got your paperwork totally up to date. It's almost like, you know, having a pet with making sure the rabies shots are up to date. Have your paperwork taken care of, because that will make you a more attractive customer to a health insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
So dealing with employers who are asking for long-term commitment, boy, you know, it hardly seems right that an employer should ask you for a long-term commitment when there isn't that reciprocal agreement. So if you live in a state that is an at-will state, and I'm not sure what the Wisconsin laws are, but in most states, it seems these days, employers can terminate you at the drop of a hat, and they don't need a reason. And so if you're in a state like that, then you need to be as honorable as you can be when you're having conversations with employers, But companies that have hourly workers are already very used to the idea of a transient workforce. And so they may say to you that they want full-time, long-term employees. But take a look around and see who in that organization really is a long-term employee. You'll probably find that there are not so many of them. So maybe there is a little bit of a game there. But if you go in with every intention of doing a really good job and being there reliably and dependably, giving 2 weeks' notice should a better opportunity comes along, you know, my feeling is that is fair game. You know, mm-hmm. all is fair in love and war, and maybe all is fair in work at this point. You need to take care of yourself. An employer who gets angry at you for wanting to take care of yourself and your future, well, what's that anger all about? This isn't a time for that kind of an emotional power trip. Do your job well. Do it honorably. Be there and give the employer fair warning should you decide to leave. But you need to take care of yourself first.
Yeah. Thanks, Mary, very much for the call. General advice before we go back to phones, if you can afford to keep so much money in your savings for this very eventuality, what's your advice on how much should be there, Martha?
Well, I think the going advice is 6 months of living expenses. I think that's what all the experts say. But most people, when they're being laid off, are taken by surprise. So mm-hmm. you can't exactly retroactively save. So if you don't have that 6 month nest egg socked away already, then you might want to start thinking about services that you can start cutting and just, you know, put money away. If you notice that people are being laid off in your company, really consider paying only minimum balances on your credit card so you can start socking away the cash. Cash is going to have to start being king now, and you can catch up on your credit card payments later. It's all about saving money, saving cash at this point, mm-hmm. especially if you're seeing that your coworkers are being laid off, because eventually you will be too.
Right. Jeff from Dubuque. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I regard myself as a high performer who was in a situation where my employer had to restructure, and I unfortunately was one of the people that ended up without a position. So at my severance meeting with my supervisor, basically what I went in with a positive attitude, and I said, I respect your ability to move troops around and do what's best for the company, and I will do what I can as long as I'm employed here to make sure that the transition is smooth to new leadership. And I'll tell you, that quite frankly floored them.
Oh, bad.
An angry employee. I came out very positive, and on the last day that I worked, I was involved with doing three programs for my employer, and at the end of the day, I just packed up my office and walked out and moved on to something else. But to that day, I mean, even to the end, the HR people were very impressed and said, I can't believe you're laying off this guy because he's got a great attitude and he's working hard all the way to the end. Mm-hmm. So I think that, I think if you have a positive attitude and then you do what's best, you know, for yourself and for the company, even at the end, that will lead to a positive reference. But the other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that to make sure that if people are high performers, that in their severance contract they have a rehire status, meaning that if the company is able to bring them back if they so choose. Because a lot of times when people are laid off, at least with my employer, there was a boilerplate agreement that said you cannot be rehired by the company within 2 years. And for me, if you're a high performer, why wouldn't they want to bring you back?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm so glad you asked that question, because I actually spoke with an employment attorney on that very topic. He was helping me parse the severance package language. And I posed that exact question to him, and he said that kind of language is designed to protect a company from having you come back and perhaps double dip. You know, get severance package and apply for a job and maybe even litigate for discrimination or something like that. But he said that language is rendered moot when both parties decide to reengage in a workplace relationship. So if your company should say, man, I sure would like to have that guy back, they are totally within their rights to come and back and get you. And you are within your rights to say, I'm so glad to hear from you, sign me on. Or you can say, sorry, I've moved on with my life. So that clause is just kind of a protection clause, but it doesn't preclude it does not preclude the company from reaching back out to you and inviting you to consider a new job there.
Did you find something else pretty quickly, Jeff?
Yes, I was a stickler on that because to me it seemed like it was impugning my reputation as a high quality employee. The fact that that the door was not there, and the fact that it was in print saying you have to, you know, jump through all these hoops in order for us to be to rehire you. And I thought that just, you know, for a high-performing employee, loyal and dedicated to the organization, there should be greater respect shown in saying that this person should come in.
Sure.
But thank you.
Wait, before you go.
I'd like to just sort of add something to that. You had mentioned that was a boilerplate document.
Yeah.
This is where it's really important not to take any of this personally. The HR departments of these companies are putting together these documents in partnership with their legal side. And the legal side is mostly motivated to protect the company from total wackos who might want to really create trouble for them later. So that's why the severance language is so buttoned up and so rigid and so unkind. So the best thing I could say is don't take that stuff personally. It's not for you. It's for that small sliver of population that really could create trouble for the company later.
Did you go back to the company, Jeff, or did you move on?
No, I moved on, but I did do business with the company in my new venture and maintained positive relationships with people even to this day, which is now 10 years after after the severance. But again, for me, it was respect for the organization and their ability in time of need to move people around and to cut their workforce and restructure it. And they just wanted a different paradigm in my operations and brought somebody else in that could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, so I didn't take it personally that it was me.
Right.
I, you know, said I have a commitment to my employees, my staff, the people that I was serving, my customers, to do the best I can for as long as I was there.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. Well, there's an attitude, huh, Martha?
Yeah, it's wonderful. Boy, people can take like 17 different pages from that guy's book. He also raises the interesting point that you can continue doing business with a company in your future jobs. So many companies might bring you back on as a freelancer or a consultant because they still need to have the work done. They just have to cut overhead in some way. So how you handle yourself during the severance process will speak volumes in terms of what your prospects are later.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, this company became a customer of his current employer. So these relationships, they last you your lifetime, so you've got to take very good care of them.
Mm-hmm. Mike from Appleton, hi.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Mike.
I'd like to give some practical suggestions to people who still have their jobs, the ones who've already lost them, perhaps, you know, in a different conversation. You have to be smart about what you're doing. You have to be aware of what's going on in your company. Are you in the sort of business that is going to be outsourced, or are they laying people off? So you have to prepare yourself for, you know, what could possibly come down and hit you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you also have to, if you could find a way to create your own business, your own job, whatever that may be, and do that parallel to your, you know, what you're doing currently working for your employer, that's also very important. It gives you a huge sense of tranquility, knowing that, you know, you have this other stream of income coming in. And prepare yourself to hit the ground running. You know, the day you're fired, you have your plan in place to immediately start looking for something, expand your own business. You know what you're going to do as far as expenses. You know, don't get caught by the surprise. anticipate that you're going to get laid off this afternoon and be ready for it.
Those are fantastic pieces of advice, and I think that the overarching theme of what you're saying is that know that you could be laid off at any time. If you draw a paycheck, you could lose that paycheck. It has nothing to do with who you are, how high quality a worker you are, whether the company is thriving or whether it's trimming people down. It could be you, and it could be you this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So my perfect suggestions is be prepared.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. Tell me about, the book has some really interesting stories from voices of experience, people
yes.
who have been through this. Do you want to just pick a couple and tell us those stories, Martha?
Well, I think that a couple of my favorite ones are, well, let me back up just a little bit. So what I did was I chose stories that were people who landed well. I didn't want to tell stories about people who are going through the frustration of trying to find a new job, because the point here was to tell real stories so the readers could understand that there is an outcome that can be a happy one.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I kept hearing from a lot of outplacement companies over the years is that, you know, if you get laid off, we'll help you find a job, and it's going to be a better job than the one that you had before. And I thought, well, maybe that's true, maybe it's not, but let's just see what happens when a person lands happily. So that one story I was telling you about earlier of the woman who was laid off, it was over a phone call. It was like a conference call. And this other guy completely vented his spleen. She kept her mouth shut. She went on a vacation that had already been paid for, so she might as well go. And while she was in Scotland, she stopped by a cyber cafe to check her email. And lo and behold, there was an email from the exact same company asking her to accept a job at a promotion. So when I was interviewing her, she was sitting at her same desk with the same phone number, same view out the window that she had before she had been laid off. But now she's making even more money. So that can be that can happen.
Right.
Another story which I found very interesting was another woman who worked for a company that was based in Colorado, and it had been bought up by another firm, and she was watching her original company just get stripped down to basically nothing. And she felt that her best prospects were to move to California and open up a division there where she could start opening up a new market. So she asked her boss, you know, what are the prospects here? Should I make this expensive move because my husband's laid off? I can't afford to take a risk. And he said, no, go ahead. It's a great idea. We'll open up a new market there, and you're fine. The company's fine. Your job is secure. So she moved to California. She moved to Carmel, which is an extremely expensive place to live. The day after she closed on her new house, she got the notice that her company was closing and everybody was being laid off. So the story here is that when she asked her boss whether it was a good idea for her to move to California, and he told her that, oh, yes, everything is fine, she didn't believe him.
Mm-hmm.
She saw the handwriting on the wall, and so she spent quite a bit of time talking to other companies who were actually competitors of her original company. And she had relationships with these people over the years anyway. So by the time she got the notice that her original company was being shut down, she had three offers on the table.
Oh, good for her.
In the meantime, she had been telling her coworkers, really, you guys need to start taking care of your careers here. And they all said, no, we believe our company. So when she lost her job, she had three offers on the table. Her coworkers were all thrown out of their jobs en masse, so they would end up competing with each other at a reduced market out there.
Mm-hmm.
So the lesson there is that listen to your instincts and take care of yourself and
right.
take action on your own behalf. Be as loyal an employee as you can be, but know that when at the end of the day, it still is about your career, your life, your financial health, and you've got to be your own best shepherd
right.
in those areas.
Yeah. Philip from Eau Claire is next. Hi, Philip.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I wish that our best friend would have read your book before she got her layoff notice. She's kind of a high-paid professional, and she didn't see it coming. And I wonder if you could extend some of your advice to those of us who are either freelancers or independent contractors or whatever, when we have to deal with the idea that we might have gotten rejected, but we're still going to have to deal with the same people in the field.
Rejected how?
Our book proposal, our project, you know, whatever our project might have been, they didn't like this one, but they might like the next one, you know, or if we're given a contract, maybe we should take a couple days to read it, that kind of stuff, you know, where you're not acting precipitously, I guess. That was the thing that made me pull over. That was what was so interesting to me, kind of the professional advice you were giving us. And I was thinking that would extend to people who work in fields that are contractors, consultants, writers, program developers, anybody like that.
Well, we're kindred spirits because that's what I am. I've been self-employed for 20 years now, and I know exactly what you're talking about here.
Yeah, it's so hard not to get mad, but you have to not get mad because you're going to deal with these people.
Well, you might as well not get mad anyway because, you know, they don't owe you anything more than just fair dealing.
Their best consideration, yeah.
Exactly. And so if they do treat you fairly and considerately, then you would want to deal with them in the future. But if they treat you unfairly or duplicitously, which is my second favorite word, over precipitously, you know, that tells you something about what kind of people they are. And then because you are master of your own ship, you can choose not to work with them, and it's their loss.
And again, the part about the severance moment, I thought that was so important because our friend just thought she had no choices and her situation was so much worse because she didn't think about it for a couple of days.
Yeah, if I could say one thing to the world, it's don't sign right away. You don't have to, and you owe it to yourself to sign with a cool head. You may be able to negotiate much better terms that way. Severance packages may be template, but they're not set in stone. And that's where the pen comes out, and you can tweak and cross things out, add things in. You can really take very good care of yourself. And there's no reason why you should be bullied into signing something, especially signing your job away.
So your book title is Rebound. I'm going to order it from Amazon as soon as I get off the phone.
Oh, yay. I'll be checking sales ranking.
Okay, it's the next thing I'll do, and I'm going to give it to her. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Philip. Thanks very much. That must make you feel great, though, in doing this kind of work, don't you, Martha, know that you're going to help somebody right off the bat?
Well, you know, it's my calling in life. I have spent the last, well, at least 15 years of my life really studying what it means to be engaged in your full potential doing work that you love. And it doesn't have to be a new agey kind of thing. It's a real practical exchange of passion and skill and talent for financial security. Companies need that, and so do employees,
right.
Individuals.
More phone calls in a moment. Martha Finney is our guest this hour, and her book is Rebound, A Proven Plan for Starting Over After Job Loss. And here's our number. We have a couple lines open for you right now. They've been busy. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, that address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls from Martha and Wendy from Milwaukee. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Kathleen and Martha. This is Wendy Bauman. I work with the Wisconsin Women's Business Initiative Corporation. And actually, I didn't read your book, but I will pick it up. And my question sort of piggybacks off of some of the other callers. But at WIPIC, we always say that especially in these difficult times and layoffs and changes, especially around people's job security, that we always say it's a really good idea to have a small business in your back pocket. So, you know, did you include some of those thoughts in your book, or if you could just maybe expand a little bit more about, you know, people really thinking about that fill-in business, that part-time business, especially when they're transitioning, you know, in more of an emergency situation like a layoff?
I think the best answer to that is yes and no. My theory that no matter who we work for, we're all self-employed is a through line that extends throughout the entire book. But for most people, who don't consider themselves entrepreneurs, that can be a huge stretch in terms of actually starting a small business off on the side. And that time and effort that they spend actually building a small business could conceivably be best used to add your value to your company so that if it's at all possible to forestall a layoff, you might be able to. Not everybody has the personality or the inclination to be, in fact, self-employed. So suggesting a small business can be a good idea for some people, but not necessarily for all. And I think it might be more helpful for people who are inclined toward starting their own business to think about that regardless of what their full-time employment is all about.
Yeah, I would agree. When you're in a situation more where, there's really choices and options, that we just like to always make sure that people do also think about that. They have the skill, they have the trade, and even some of the callers on the phone were talking about, you're really setting up your own business. Ideally, do it in the smartest and best way, and you're selling back the services that you were doing previously as an employee with that employer.
Absolutely, yeah. That's one of the reasons why it's so important to keep your cool during the termination conversation, because they still need you. Just because they've decided that they have to chop that slot off their org chart doesn't mean that they don't need to have that work done. So going back to the employer as a contractor is a very valuable way of continuing to get income coming in. But it all starts with coming to grips with the fact that you're self-employed regardless of who you work for. And once you get used to that idea, then the other steps are a little bit more natural.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Wendy, for your call. Carrie is next from Madison. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, it's Terry. Is that me?
Oh, Terry. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I have a question about the health insurance and the COBRA coverage, and along with finding everything else that your guest has to say very interesting, since I just found myself as a laid-off person a couple of days ago.
Sorry.
I did not see it coming. I read a newspaper article recently that I thought indicated that as part of the stimulus package, starting in March, the government was going to pick up two-thirds or so of the COBRA costs for people who had been laid off.
You are talking outside of my scope of expertise, I'm sorry to have to say. So you may want to talk to your HR department on that subject. You have time to decide whether or not you want to pick up your company's COBRA plan. In fact, it's possible to actually retroactively pick up your company's COBRA plan. And I think you have a couple of months to do that. You might want to double check.
How do you check on that?
Talk to your HR department
on
that. And they should be very helpful to you. In fact, they owe it to you to be helpful to you.
What if they're not particularly inclined to do that? Are there other sources that one can check with on that?
Well, if you have a law firm that you can work with to double check, Google that is a question. But really, I don't know why your HR department wouldn't be helpful to you. They may be feeling a little sensitive about you coming to them right away, but it's their job, so make them do their job. They've got a job. They get to keep their job, so make them do their job.
Okay.
Exactly.
Good advice. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Our number is 800-486-8655. What's your feeling, Martha, about how easy it is to find something else right now? You've got a good sense of where the jobs are and how many people are losing jobs. Are we in such a downturn that you may find yourself for some months without something new?
It's possible, depending upon what you did for a living before, what your skill set is. Obviously, if you're a car manufacturer, it could be really tough right now. One thing that I'm really coming to grips with is the fact that people are depending way too much on online job boards. And one of the comments that I received repeatedly as I was researching Rebound is that the people who relied on job boards to find their new job said that they didn't even get one call back. So I think that your best source of finding new work is through a very systematic way of networking. It's not going to groups and, business card exchanges. It's about identifying companies where you would really like to work and going to them and asking for interviews and talking to them very calmly about what your abilities are and your skills, and really leveraging the hidden job market out there. It could take anywhere from a couple of weeks to find a new job, especially if the company that just laid you off is hiring you back at a promotion. It could take you 5 months or so, but use all your resources to find a new job. And this could be the opportunity for you to make some other dreams come true. If your former job had kept you sort of locked into a community that you weren't so crazy about and your dream has always been to move elsewhere, now's the time to do it. If you're out of work, it's not like you're leaving a job to go someplace else. Go to that place and pursue your dreams where you want to be. So the idea is to look at this as a wide open space of opportunities for you to take a next best step that will really satisfy some dreams that you've been perhaps deferring over the years.
Right. We had somebody call with a new COBRA rule. I assume this is correct. The employer must pay 65% of COBRA costs for 9 months.
Wow.
So that updates us on that. That's something.
Well, thank you for the update.
Yeah, that's great.
That's wonderful.
I'll have to
double check that.
Okay. Here's an email. I feel that it is still true that you can do the best job you can for your employer, but you must always think about what you will do next when your services are no longer needed. What do you think about always having a next plan?
Always have a next plan. Remember, no matter who you work for, you're self-employed. It's up to you to take care of your career and yourself during all of this time. So you should always have your network current. You should be making friends with people in your industry, your profession, your community, outside of your job. You should be actively pursuing relationships of all kinds. Obviously, your resume should be completely up to date. A couple of the people that I interviewed in Rebound said that they were actually tasked to write severance packages and layoff plans for their company, not having a clue that they were actually going to be on the list.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they found that there they were out on the street with an outdated resume. And the last thing you want to do is try to update your resume when all the voices in your head are telling you that you're a loser.
Exactly.
You want to do it when you're secure and confident and busy doing your job.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely, always be thinking of the next step ahead. You know, if you're an ambitious professional, you should be thinking of your next step ahead anyway, because it's always about the upward climb.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call, Terry. And let's go next to Michael from Milwaukee. Hi, Michael.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good, good. I hope you can hear me okay.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. I am having trouble finding employment at the present time. I was in my own business for over 25 years, fixing up old houses, etc. And consequently, then in 98, I worked for a mortgage company also, an accounting firm, et cetera, but in sales, and then sales fell drastically due to a bunch of circumstances. So my employment record is, I don't know, not very desirable. Do you have any advice for me?
Well, first of all, don't think of your employment record as not being very desirable.
Well, I have absences, were times where I was not employed. The sales went down, people ask me, why did you get let go? And, there was questions there. And so, just a whole gamut of things. I believe I have something to offer, but it's hard for me to find work.
Right. Okay. So in Rebound, I interview an executive coach named Duncan Matheson. And he tells the story. He talks about how to tell your story in 2 minutes. And that is all about opening up your narrative about who you are based on what your passions are, what curiosities have driven you throughout your entire working career, and concluding that entire story with the sentiment of, as you know, we've had a downturn in the economy, and as a result, a lot of really great people have had to lose their job or be laid off. And so tell me about your company. What is your plan for blah, blah, blah? So the idea is to always control your self-story in a way that's framed in a positive way, that talks about who you are in the most upbeat light, because clearly you have to be a fantastic employee, because otherwise you wouldn't be calling today. And it's just a question of having had a few nicks and dings on your resume. And so you want to shine the light on what advantages you have to offer an employer. I think that as a result of all of this downturn, that interviewers are going to be a lot less persnickety, is the word that comes to mind, about a resume that has taken a little bit of hammering.
Right. And on that note, we must say goodbye. Martha, thank you so much. It's such a helpful
Kathleen,
book, and I enjoyed the interview.
Me.
Thanks. Martha Finney, it's a paperback book. If you're worried about expense, this one's a paperback. Rebound, a proven plan for starting over after job loss. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Rob Schroeder for on-air production in our Milwaukee studios, and thanks for all of your calls, everybody. Until tomorrow, this is the Ideas Network.